I think this is definitely going to be a wonderful episode of PageCast, because not only are we at the French Lick Literary Festival, but I'm also sitting down with Ashraf Jamal. I'm Yuta Armanis, your host for this episode. And Ashraf, we've just come from one of your sessions where you spoke about writing of African art, and it was such a lovely and interesting masterclass. How do you feel post that?
Well, the important thing is the audience. They basically generate the value of the conversation. I could feel immediately an enormous positive and richly complex and sensitive energy because, you know, basically I'm politically incorrect in just about everything I think. And I felt that the audience got the reasons why I was trying to explain the complexities of writing about Africa, because Africa has been besmirched and reductively perceived for over 600 years, you know. But at the same time, if you think of Pliny's idea that out of Africa always something new arises, it's that sense of radical novelty which the continent is able to generate, which is what I was trying to deal with. The promise, not the punitive tragedy of the continent, is what I am primarily focused on, and how our artists are able to generate in the most creative, productive, and inspiring ways the stories of innovation that emerge from a so-called oppressed zone.
You have such an interesting point of view, and just even sitting in the masterclass, I found it so fascinating, not only hearing what the audience was asking you afterwards, but the focus on the various complexities. So there's never just one singular way of viewing something, but there are multiple perspectives. So just from art in the 21st century, Africa, it's gaining so much global recognition. What stories are being told through visual mediums that hasn't really fully been captured, or perhaps never can? Could you share a bit more about that?
Yes, in this regard, I think it's important to remember the recently deceased Koyo Kuyo's words. Marvelous director of the Zeitz, was to be the future director, curator of the Venice Biennale for next year. But she said, you know, instead of just creating works that are designed for a foreign audience, the important thing is to look at how Africans look at themselves. And there's that closer, intimate awareness of our own cultures that is vital. At the same time, as while I agree with that argument, I believe that we are a complex world that imbricates realms from everywhere. Everywhere is here. You know, and in the case of South Africa is made out of migrations across two oceans and across land. So that gives the richness and depth and texture of our society. So there is no essential vision of Africa that I advocate. Rather, as Nelson Mandela beautifully put it in his inaugural speech, when he embraced both the jacaranda and the mimosa, he said, both trees have a right to be planted and to grow in this land. I believe everybody belongs here, and this is not a place for some imaginary idea of Black Africa. I think it's absurd, I think it's insulting, and it's profoundly false.
I love how you own your truth, Ashraf. You say everything with so much confidence, and there's so much appreciation towards the work that you do. So just in terms of your role, have you found your contribution in the field?
Well, I mean, as I understand it, for me, I'm an interlocutor. I'm somebody who listens to the lives of others, rather like you, mm-hmm. in fact. And I feel my job is to be attentive. It's mediumistic, and to understand the roles of other artists and the way they think and feel and experience the world. And for me, the vital thing is to give as many perspectives as possible, to make the world realize there is no single picture. At all.
So even during your masterclass, there was a particular illustration about the 26-year-old.
Uh-huh.
Yes, and you had mentioned that he was really trying to find his identity.
Yeah.
As being Indian, but loving various things from commerce, his culture. Could you share a little bit more about that too? Because I feel like it fits so well into what you have just described.
Well, I'll frame it in the following way by reiterating a remark by James Coetzee when he talks about being no longer European, not yet African. The no longer not yet is the state that we all live in, irrespective of our ethnicity, our gender, our culture, our history. We live in this ambivalent zone between worlds, and that's what makes it so exciting as a place to occupy. And in the case of the young Mashir Karenshin as an African Indian, the whole history here is about the Indian Ocean migration, about indentured labor. But more importantly, it's about the fact that these are merely histories of people who live here right now. And the point is, everybody belongs here. So political movements like Dudula are obscene because they try to excise and remove other people and create some fantastical essentialist idea of being South African, which is, well, plain dumb. Apart from that, it's fascist. And of course, nobody in their right minds would endorse a world that is so isolationist in its vision and so narrow and prejudicial.
So even during the masterclass too, what I loved about it was you not only focused on your work, but various illustrations highlighting different perceptions. You were reading through quite a couple of quotes. So specifically, when you go and read a work of art, how does that process really differ for you as opposed to reading a book?
It's a very, very interesting question. Well, for me, everything is done inductively and intuitively, but it also relies on a massive bank of prior knowledge. But what I don't do is I don't interview the artist. I respond to the work. I write that text first. And then only after that, if there are any particular questions I need to ask, I will approach an artist. And because I believe visual artists are not the best representatives through the spoken word or the written word of what it is that he, she, or they imagine they are creating.
Very fascinating. I like your approach quite a lot. Even sitting in your masterclass, what I liked was that engagement. You didn't just sit down and present your thoughts, but it was a class filled with so much learning. So something I really took away from it, and I really wanted to pick your brain about that as well, is how you said that everything is visible, but nothing is visible at the same time. And even when going through all of these various illustrations, something you also said that the photograph may be there, but the thing that you take away from it is not actually visible. It's outside of the frame. Could you share a little bit more about those thoughts?
Well, Jean Baudrillard, French philosopher, spoke about a world that is more visible than the visible. What he meant was, at this moment in the 21st century, we live in an overexposed culture, a world where everything seems accessible, and yet nothing is accessible. Why? Because the image is a saturated zone of presentation and reception, but the saturation has killed the complexity and subtleties of connection. So, for example, the selfie, for example, or the Instagram page is an ephemeral space of communication that nowhere near gets the core of any inner being. And that's because we have denied ourselves the richness of being human through technology. And the key thing for me is to find how technology can rehumanize itself and reconnect us. I think personalities like you are vital in this exchange because you bring the human back into technology.
What an interesting point of view. You're very multidimensional, deeply poetic. But also, I want to bring it back to when we started this episode. You had mentioned that you are so known for being politically incorrect. You speak your truth, you share your thoughts. So something I found quite interesting was, how is also really being called a Karen in this cultural moment affected how you see yourself or how others also see and treat you?
Luckily, I haven't been cancelled or baited that often, but I have been. I've been denied the right to write about 200 years of thought by women about women.
Mm-hmm.
And as I explained to you, that basically as a single father and a widower for 22 years, I was the one buying the tampons. And I'm the one who gave Mary Wollstonecraft the rights of women to my 16-year-old for her birthday. I have a huge passion for Simone de Beauvoir. My point is this. It's absurd to presume that it is only appropriate that I read this particular work. Would that therefore mean as a so-called black man of Indian, Basutu, Scottish, and French extraction, I have no right to write about Edouard Manet? It doesn't make sense because all the world is available to everyone. This is the vision that I have and I hold fast to. And I believe the moral bigotry that's roaming the world right now is just a diseased indication of human failure, which will be overcome. As one of the attendees at the talk very beautifully said, that change is inevitable and wellness will return to a global civilization.
And art is such a powerful tool as well to
art's a vital tool because art is not about statement. It's not about ideology. It's about finding those tender moments. And I mentioned at length the importance of certain women painters and writers that are central to my own psychological makeup and why they will continue to prevail because they are finding those subtle ways in which to restore value in a world that's becoming hysterical and noisy. You know, sometimes I use the example of Usha Sajaram, I use the example of Georgia O'Keeffe, I use the example of Hilma af Klint, you know, all different kinds of artists at different moments in history who have a powerful story to tell about a counterintuitive drive against fascism.
So then even with your own work, do you feel a sense of responsibility to reclaim or redefine your name? Or are you happy to just really let it evolve on its own?
No, I find no desire or interest in reclaiming. Personally, I have zero interest in identity politics.
Mm-hmm.
I believe in the value and the rights of human beings, but I don't believe in reducing anybody to a type, let alone myself.
Mm-hmm. So fascinating, and I'm really enjoying this conversation. At what point in your life did you have that moment where you felt that you're not interested in reclaiming your name? But that constant pursuit of evolvement. Was there any particular moment that really evoked that and you decided that this is now going to be your truth?
See, well, I don't need to reclaim my name because my name is extremely beautiful. I mean, Ashraf means more than honorable and Jamal means beauty.
Mm-hmm.
It's a done deal. All I've got to do is be answerable to it.
I love that. Someone once said that names have so much power and often we overlook it because we sometimes would love to be someone else. And then when you actually look into the history or what exactly your name means, and then you reflect on your life, it indicates that you are going to have an incredible lifespan. Like I used to dislike my name, interestingly enough. I felt that it was different. And sometimes I just really wanted to be in the front of the class. And already, you know, my name begins with a U. And I did some research and I was like, wow, pure, rich, warrior maiden from the mountain. Who wouldn't want to be a resilient individual? And in a world where we live in right now as well, you know, there's this constant idea that you need to fit into a particular box. And this is why I even mentioned earlier, I loved how you said that sometimes what we are looking at, we try to look inside that photograph within that frame, but there's so much to see outside of it. So now also being at this Friendship Literary Festival, is there any key moments that you've loved?
Well, in terms of the key moments that I've loved, it's actually a conversation around, and I will not mention the name, this very influential media mogul, as I'd like to think of her, but she made the following observation, said at this particular festival, we are done with all the predictive themes that have consumed us, like the, you know, the identity politics, decolonization. You know, while these are of worth considering, they are also deeply reductive and dangerous mechanisms because they're both reactive. And reactionary politics, reactionary cultures as a rule, are never ever going to succeed. They're actually, forgive the phrase, they're an epistemological folly. They're a mistake conceptually. An error of such huge note. Because why? Because it makes you forget the rich textures and complexities of global history, which impacts us at every moment, anywhere on the planet.
Don't you just love that coming together at this festival, we get to have those engagements with others. And it's something I believe that's going to last with you for quite a while.
No, absolutely. As I said, I mean, I really, really was inspired by the audience at my talk. You know, and again, I feel that there's a yearning in all of us, you know, for a return to compassion and to care, to love, you know, in this loveless time.
I couldn't agree more. Your work really just often blurs that line between critique, poetry, and philosophy. So, Ashraf, the last thing I do need to know is there anything in particular you set out to do this year?
There's been so much that has been done, but at the moment I'm finishing a new book on 200 years of abstraction, and beginning with William Turner and concluding in the desert in Qatar. So that's the book I'm finishing.
I can't wait to read it, but thank you so much for your time. And I think that this is a PageCast episode both of us won't really forget, because we get to do it in such a beautiful courtyard at Smitten in Frankrijk during the Frankrijk Literary Festival. So I do hope that you enjoy the rest of the festival, that you get to meet more incredible like-minded individuals and also those who have different viewpoints from you.
Well, differing viewpoints are absolutely essential. That's the key thing. But healthy differences, that's the key thing.